Our first case for argument this morning is Bright against Hill's Pet Nutrition. Mr. Dorst.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning. May it please the court. This hostile work environment case of Liz Bright is a companion case to the hostile work environment case of Carol Isaacs, which the Court of Appeals decided on May 4th.
Are there any more in the pipeline?
Liz Bright was hired at the same...
Could you answer my question?
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
Are there any more in the pipeline?
There is a man who is a witness who has filed a complaint, and another lady who is a witness who has filed a complaint.
There are two retaliation claims pending,
correct,
but no more substantive claims.
That's as I remember it. That's correct.
Thank you.
Liz Bright was hired at the same Richmond plant in Indiana in February of 2002, a couple months after Carol Isaacs was hired. Liz Bright was terminated at the Richmond plant in November...
I hope you mean her employment was terminated.
Yes. Thank you. At the Richmond plant, November of 2002, before Carol Isaacs' employment was terminated more than 2 years later in February of 2005. The time of the employment of Liz Bright was within the same time of the employment of Carol Isaacs at the same Richmond plant. The Carol Isaacs decision held that events during her entire employment should have been considered. In the case of Liz Bright, the district court erred in instructing the jury during the trial that events before March 29, 2002 could not be considered part of the hostile work environment.
Now, you know, some of the worst evidence in the case has to do with this pornography, but the employer took some remedial action. And so what incentive will employers have to take remedial action if the jury is going to hear about it, you know, even though there was prompt action?
First of all, the cases of this court, such as Paz versus Wakanda and other cases, the Cerros series of cases, 1 and 2, make clear that a piece or the hostile work environment must not be examined in pieces like the pornography and or a piece like statements or a piece like the groping of her breast and things like that. It's the totality of the circumstances that must be considered.
But then when this was brought to the attention of the employer, there was a full investigation, at least as I read the record. They reviewed all the past emails. They suspended the 11 employee without pay for 2 weeks.
Your Honor, we disagree with that. Those are conclusory statements that have been made in the record. But the investigation was never produced. We can't judge what happened in the investigation unless we see it and we see what pornography there was, when the employer first knew about it, which we still don't know. The district court said that the employer knew about it at least by March 29, 2002. Actually, Liz Bright had complained in January or February of 2002. Carol Isaacs had complained in January of 2002. Neither of those cases was anything done. It was not until Diana Clark complained in March of 2002 that anything was done, and then we don't know what was done. We don't know if Colgate did it. We don't know if Hills did it. We don't know we don't know the extent of the pornography. We do know from Liz Bright's testimony, Carol Isaacs' testimony, that they saw pornography from virtually the very beginning, the first year certainly, the year 2000, when it was the first full year of their employment. And they saw the team leaders viewing it, in particular Terry Abner and Everett Jenkins. And then that was even confirmed by the March actions, which we don't know exactly what happened, but the employer claims in conclusory terms that it suspended or did something with Everett Jenkins and Terry Abner, the team leaders. And so this corroborates the testimony of Liz Bright and Carol Isaacs that they saw the team leaders viewing the pornography, and the pornography or the team leaders were managers on page, I think it's 65 of the appendix.
And I just have one other question about the pornography within the 300-day period. Did Bright ever testify that she saw any pornography after those suspensions, in other words?
After the 300-day period.
Right, within the 300-day period.
Bill Pebworth asked both Liz Bright and Carol Isaacs to view the pornography that was on his computer. She said she refused to do it. There's no testimony as to exactly what she saw and what she didn't see, but she said that she refused to look at his pornography, and he kept saying, here, look at this, and look at this, and look at this, and she said, no, I don't want to see it.
So there's no evidence that she saw it, just that he asked her to look.
Right.
Okay.
And it was harassing to say, you know, hey, I've got this stuff on my computer, come look at it. She said, I don't want to see it. And Carol Isaacs confirmed that Pebworth asked her to do it, and then a new team leader reported it, a female team leader reported that she found pornography. And so there was a whole series of events. I would like to spend the last minute saying that the district court also erred in granting summary judgment to Colgate as a matter of law, which was in error. That was the company most responsible, and so we had an empty chair at the trial under the decisions of Worth versus Tyre and Flowers versus Columbia College and the other cases.
You, Mr. Darst, you litigated and lost this issue in Isaacs. You complain that Hills is refusing to accept Isaacs. It seems that you're not willing to accept Isaacs either.
Your Honor, that is a different situation because the district court in Isaacs ruled that because we had incorporated by reference, the district court would not consider that evidence.
District court ruled. I'm referring to what we ruled.
Yes. And you ruled that an investor was not an employer. But the evidence here shows that Colgate was much more than an investor. Colgate was the one who was most responsible. So we have a situation where the one most responsible is an empty...
Look, are you aware that you litigated and lost the issue whether Colgate could be liable? You may not think we wrote an opinion to your liking, but you lost.
Yes. Yes. I was thinking that in that case, the court adopted the district court's...
We didn't adopt the district court's finding. We made a ruling.
Oh, thank you. In this case, there were other errors in that the district court viewed the evidence in pieces, such as the pornography, the threats to pets, which was particularly vulnerable to Liz Bright because she had no children, could not have children, and considered her pets as her children. The court refused to allow struck the cross-examination of her supervisor without any stating any reason, refused to allow cross-examination as to what pornography was found. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Darst. Ms. Sciolino.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'd like to begin by addressing some of Your Honor's questions about the pornography and whether the court made a mistake in refusing to let the jury consider it. First, you had asked about whether the pornography persisted after the March 2002 cleanup, and we think that there is evidence that it did. As the plaintiff's attorney discussed, I think it's at page 92 and 364 to 365 of the transcript, there was evidence that Pebworth pleaded with Bright not to tell that he still had pornography. We also cited in our brief to testimony from Carol Isaacs at 517 to 518 that there was still more pornography, 479, 484. And Antoinette Brown testified very specifically at pages 625 to 26 that she still saw naked women, women with horses, women in bikinis, mostly women in sexual positions after the cleanup. And as the plaintiff's attorney said, there was some evidence in the case that Carol Isaacs and Elizabeth Bright had called the hotline and complained about pornography, but nothing was done before the cleanup. So we think that factually the court made a mistake in saying that as a matter of law, the employer addressed it promptly and remedied it. You also asked, Your Honor, about an employer's incentive to address harassment if it doesn't insulate it from liability for one part of it. And we think that this court's decision in Phelan actually addresses that. And in Phelan, this court emphasized that the question when it comes to employer's liability and about the remedial measures taken is whether the employer took steps to stop the harassing activity as a whole, not just one segment of it. So a district court can't take the whole pie, slice it up into six pieces, and say, well, you addressed this one-sixth of a slice, and therefore there's no liability for that. We think that what district courts should be doing is allowing in all the evidence of the hostile work environment and all the evidence of an employer's remedial steps, and then the jury should determine whether those steps were reasonably calculated to stop the harassment as a whole. And we think that also conforms to the Supreme Court's opinion in Morgan, which emphasized that there is just a single unlawful employment practice, in cases of a hostile work environment. We also think that it's important that the jury be able to consider the evidence of pornography in evaluating whether the plaintiff's work environment rose to the level of an actionable hostile work environment. In other words, whether the sexual harassment was a hostile work environment, and that it was a mistake to tell the jury that it couldn't consider the pornography at all in evaluating her claim. We also think that the jury, that the court made a mistake in telling the jury during the trial that it couldn't consider any of the conduct that had occurred before March 29, 2002, and in telling the jury at the end of the trial that it couldn't consider anything that had happened in processing because it was irrelevant since it happened in a different area of the plant. We think these instructions contravene the Supreme Court's holding in Morgan and this court's recent decision in Isaacs versus Colgate-Palmolive. And although the defendant has argued that Isaacs is distinguishable from this case, we disagree. The defendant first argued that Isaacs is inapplicable because Bright was subject to an entirely different chain of command in processing and stretch wrap, but the defendant doesn't really explain this. And we think the cases are not distinguishable. Elizabeth Bright had the same HR manager, Jackie Vanderpool, while she was working in both processing and stretch wrap, and the evidence was that Ms. Vanderpool was responsible for enforcing the anti-discrimination policy at the plant. And the plant manager was also the person that Jackie Vanderpool reported to, although the person who filled that position changed during that time. The defendant also argues that Isaacs is inapplicable because there was not a series of unaddressed complaints in this case, but we think, again, that the evidence shows to the contrary. The plaintiff complained in processing to Dangerfield and Abner about cussing and this incident with an auger, to her team leader, Doug Dills, about cussing a dangerous situation, the auger, the pornography. And at page 282, her deposition is read into the record, and she testified she complained more generally to him about sexual harassment and gender discrimination. And she complained on the hotline in February and March of 2002. And she also complained in the meeting with the plant manager on April 24th. And there was also evidence from Isaacs, Brown, Flume, and Dewey Lakes that they had complained about harassment at the plant and that there wasn't never any response, or actually Ms. Vanderpool told Mr. Lakes that a hostile work environment is a productive work environment. There are no further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Ellen Boshkoff. I represent the Appalese Hills Pet Nutrition and Colgate-Palmolive. Let me start by saying one thing and making it perfectly clear. We are not basing our position on any challenge to the validity of the Isaacs decision. We recognize Isaacs as controlling law.
And I don't understand why you haven't confessed error.
Because they are two totally different cases.
Two totally different cases. They're cases involving the same law, involving the same plant, and the same chain of command.
Mm-hmm. And one of them went to trial.
You had every right to disagree with Isaacs, of course, and you petitioned for rehearing, which is denied, petitioned for certiorari, which is denied. After that happens, the world has to go on.
The world does go on. We lost the Isaacs argument in the court below. That's why we went to trial.
Yes, and then the district judge changed his mind in the middle of the trial. So the district judge was right, and then the district judge made the mistake for which we had to reverse the district court in Isaacs. Very disappointing when lawyers refuse to face reality. And I don't think you're facing reality.
Well, respectfully, the factual record in that case is completely different than the
factual record is on what you can win before a jury, but it won't change the contents of the jury instructions.
And that jury instruction was not objected to.
Certainly. Morgan was raised in the district court.
In the district court, at the interim instruction, the appellant, Ms. Bright's lawyer, said the statute of limitations does not apply to hostile work environment. That was the objection made at the interim instruction. No other objections. There was certainly no specificity as to what...
What more does one need to say than to rely on Morgan, and for that matter, the district court's correct pretrial ruling.
Not
as if this were a mystery in the district court.
The objection needs to be sufficiently specific to advise the court of what is being requested. That was an interim objection The district court specifically said he was going to revisit the issue of the jury instruction at the close of all the evidence. He did revisit the issue, and as you may recall, he changed the instruction. That instruction changed from the interim to the final. The final instruction says that you can consider conduct occurring March 29, 2002, and subsequent, and any conduct that is part of the same actionable hostile work environment, with the exception of the processing events, and that was based on the factual record presented at trial. There was no objection to that instruction. The objections that we're hearing here today were not presented to the district court, and under the law, they're required to be presented. That interim instruction was simply an interim instruction. It was changed. And what we are hearing here are arguments that were not made to the district court. Those arguments shouldn't be considered on the first instance by this court. Now, as to the facts of the Isaacs, I respectfully disagree. We have a full trial record there. We have a full trial record of complaints and how they were addressed. We have a six-day jury trial. Ms. Bright was allowed to fully air her employment grievances during the six-day jury trial. The jury deliberated and rendered a verdict in less than 2 hours, and as the district court noted, simply found her claims incredible. What we have here is a case that started out incredibly broad, and now the appellant has taken one minor issue that was really not focused on or pursued in the court below and saying that this is the basis for overturning a six-day jury trial. And we respectfully disagree with that and respectfully submit that Isaacs is not controlling because the facts are different. And the facts that are different are we don't have the unaddressed complaints and we don't have the same chain of command. She reported to multiple different team leaders during the relevant time period. So for those reasons, we don't believe that Isaacs controls the outcome here. Now, moving on just briefly to the pornography issue, and I use those words advisedly because I think that's a very loaded phrase. It was inappropriate use of computers, and that issue was fully addressed by the company, and it was remediated, and the district court was absolutely correct.
Use of computers? I think the problem here is file sharing in violation of the copyright laws.
There's not very much evidence in the record as to what was on the computers. There was enough.
You don't disagree that 11 people were terminated without pay for 2 weeks. So it wasn't just people in swimsuits, I assume.
It was not just.
Yeah.
This was
real pornography.
Well, we've got.
Or else, you know, maybe these 11 have a claim.
No. We've got a very small amount of testimony regarding inappropriate material on the computer, some of which qualifies as pornography. There was actually a great deal of information on the computer system that was inappropriate, such as jokes, cartoons, a variety of information that had nothing to do with pornography. There was a very large investigation to scan the entire computer system and determine everything that should not be there. That's what the company did when it got notice of this issue. The computer system was completely audited, and two directives were sent out reminding people not to use the computer system for any inappropriate purpose, including but not limited to pornography. 11 people were suspended without pay for 2 weeks, and then there was a random system instituted to audit the computer to make sure that nothing inappropriate, pornography or not, was on the computer system. That is the action that the company took. The district court ruled that that action was appropriate and reasonable and remedied the problem. The argument that we're hearing here that there were issues with the remediation was not raised in the court below. The only argument presented in the court below, and again, this is really two different cases here. We've got what was argued to the district court and what's being argued here. The only argument that was presented to the court below on this point was that there couldn't be evidence of the investigation because there had been a discovery objection that was not pursued that should preclude the introduction of evidence relating to this. That's what was pursued in the district court. But in any event, whether this court concludes that that error was preserved or not, The district court properly ruled, based on the trial record, that the remediation was appropriate, and that once the company had notice of these issues, including but not limited to pornography, it took appropriate action, including suspending 11 employees and issuing two directives relating to computer use and instituting a random audit system. That is what the company did. And the company, I believe, is entitled to credit for that remediation.
Even if we agree with you on that, there were other incidents that happened pre-March 2002 that were excluded, like some of the statements of Buckland, how he cursed her out every day, nearly every single day. This other information was excluded as well. So how does that, I mean, I don't understand your position on that. Why wouldn't that be relevant?
In terms of the unitary hostile work environment,
right.
Because there were, this is not the pattern in Isaacs where we had complaints that were unaddressed. Every time Ms. Bright raised a complaint, it was addressed. The first complaint was unwanted attention from coworkers. That was addressed. She raised a complaint.
What about the being cursed out nearly every single day with all these horrible words said
that
about her?
Was disputed at trial, and she was impeached by her deposition testimony on that point. In her deposition, she could recall only one instance where Steve Buckland cursed her. And
so that testimony could be considered by the jury? I thought the court excluded that.
The court did exclude that.
Right.
The court did exclude that. But in terms of the record as it's presented to you for consideration of what should have been part of the record and what should be included, it's important to note that she was impeached on that. So I don't think you need to, even giving due deference to her credibility, credit that testimony because it was utterly impeached by her deposition testimony. The position that we're hearing here is you can take the favorable parts of her testimony, give those credit to, but the areas on which she was completely impeached, ignore those. I think it's appropriate for that not to be part of the case because she was impeached and testified in deposition that he only cursed one time.
Yeah, but why couldn't the jury make that determination? Why shouldn't the jury make that determination? That's your view of it.
And that's because of the instruction that, again,
right,
was not
exactly
objective.
Exactly. So I'm just saying there are other things besides the pornography that happened pre-March 2002. And if you look at our decision in Isaacs, I mean, that testimony should have come in. And this whole business about the clipboard being thrown at her, that's evidence that was excluded?
That evidence
right.
was excluded.
And that's all the pre-filing? I'm just trying to see what justification there is for not including this. Because there's other evidence besides the pornography that was excluded.
That's right. And the justification is that it's a different trial record, and unlike in Isaacs where we had complaints that were unaddressed, we have here a trial record showing complaints that were addressed, and the district court making determination based on the trial record, not a summary judgment record, as we had in Isaacs, that the events in processing were too remote in time and not connected to the events in Stretch Wrap. We also have, unlike the record in Isaacs, actual testimony regarding who Ms. Bright worked with, what she did in the processing area, which was physically distinct and separate. She testified she didn't even know anyone outside of the processing area during the time that she was in Stretch Wrap. She had multiple team leaders during this time period. There wasn't the single chain of command that we have in Isaacs. And again, we don't have unaddressed complaints. Based on that, the district court ruled that those events were not part of the same actionable hostile work environment, again, based on the trial record. The final point that's raised by the appellants is relating to the exclusion of evidence. I don't think it makes sense to go into that in great detail. I certainly could entertain questions on that, but each of the district court's evidentiary rulings were appropriate, not an abuse of discretion, and in fact, many of the issues that are raised in the brief were not appropriately raised with the district court. So in conclusion, we believe that the plaintiff, the appellant, Ms. Bright, had ample opportunity to present her all of the grievances relating to her employment, which, as you may recall, were quite broad, including relating to FMLA, disparate treatment, alleged constructive discharge, sexual harassment, She was allowed to present them in a six-day jury trial. The jury quite simply concluded that she was not credible. The evidence that she's now trying to bring in was too large part. The instructions were not preserved in the district court, and it would not change the result. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boshkoff. Anything further, Mr. Darst?
The defendant has argued credibility, and that highlights the importance of the admission of the evidence, the totality of the circumstances, so that we could show that the plaintiff was credible, that her fear for herself was based on the fact of injury to her dog, threats to injury others, threats to injury shoot other dogs that she reported even in 2002, and the court refused to allow that. The defendant has argued that some of the events were too remote in time. Well, she was actually, that time covered the same time period as the Carol Isaacs time period when both of them complained to the employer. And then Bright was moved in 2001 to stretch wrap. So the court's instruction that to ignore the evidence or not consider the evidence before March 29, 2002, even told the jury to ignore or not consider the evidence in stretch wrap even before March 29, 2002, which included the prelude of to the groping of her breast by Mark Toney, his talk about sex and sexual acts and how he was not getting sex from his wife, which started about December of 2001, as well as the pornography in January, February, March, and then continuing after that in stretch wrap. So all of that was important for the plaintiff to show to the jury. Instead, the court instructed the jury to not consider evidence before March 29, 2002, instructed the jury that the jury should not consider the evidence of pornography, and even directed a verdict and said, I've entered summary judgment on the pornography piece of the hostile work environment. And then the defendant in final argument, their first point was, you have heard about conduct before March 29, 2002, the disciplinary action, for example, which the judge has ruled is out of the case. That's on Supplemental Appendix 235. Defendant has argued that it took appropriate action. It didn't take any action against the harassers, transferred the victim, and the harassment then continued and got worse.
Thank you, Mr. Darst.
Groped and further harassed.
Case taken under advisement. Our next